Hey everyone, welcome to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Officer at Basketball Victoria. Bit of a different show today. We are out and about on the streets. We go and head out to Dr. Bridie O'Donnell to talk about women in coaching and the work that she does in that space as well. Then we have a panel of three of our most esteemed female coaches. We have Megan Moody from the Bendigo Spirit, Dr. Julia Walsh from Deakin University, and Zoe Carr from the Knox Raiders, talking about their pathways and what it's like to be a female in a fairly dominated male landscape as well. If you've managed to find us, you've probably done so via the iTunes podcast store, Spotify, Audioboom. Please do continue to subscribe, like, share, retweet, all the things that can help grow the podcast audience. We do appreciate it on our end. We do have a couple of changes coming up on the show, but we might discuss that next week. But we'll get into the panel of our guests so far, and I hope it's enjoyable listening. We're lucky enough to get some time with Dr. Bridie O'Donnell, who is the Head of Women in Sport and Recreation. Thank you for jumping in. What is your background in sport and your role overseeing the department?
I was a mediocre team sport player in school and high school, and didn't really find that I had a good endurance engine until I was in med school. So I took up triathlon, raced Olympic distance for a while, then I shifted across to doing rowing, which is a brutal endurance sport. Did that for 5 years and then went back to triathlon, did Ironman Hawaii, and then was part of a talent transfer program that the Sports Commission were funding, the AIS, to look for women time trial athletes. So certainly in cycling, but we're seeing that happening a little bit more, and definitely with the rise of AFLW, is that women are coming from other sports where they've honed skills or an engine or you know, an athletic capability, and then they're learning a new sport but as an adult. And so for me, road cycling was, you know, obviously challenging from a tactical and technical point of view, but I had the athletic capability to be able to race in Europe and the US, and I did that for 5 years.
That's awesome. And probably seeing it a little bit with the rugby sevens as well, with the last Olympics, our women's team grabbing a gold medal, and that there's a lot of transfer, I think, between sports, and we see a lot of basketballs and netballs crossover and certainly juggle that workload all the way through. What did you need to learn jumping from one elite sport into another? Were there any similarities?
Absolutely, there are. And certainly a lot of rowers and triathletes crossover, and rowing and cycling are very complementary. A lot of leg strength, back strength. But really, and I suspect we saw this with AFLW first season, with players like Erin Phillips really dominating her first year, was that it's around the non-on-field stuff as well. You know, how do you eat well? How do you recover well? How do you do strength and conditioning training? How do you mentally prepare for a game? What do you do at three-quarter time when you're losing? So all those things that athletes learn through years of failing and trying again and having a plan B, C and D, they're the things that I've absolutely benefited from. And that's the reason why this office is so important. You know, the Office of Women in Sport and Recreation was created to address a lot of the inequalities that we were seeing in participation, in leadership and in facilities for girls and women in Victoria. And when we see that girls and boys and men and women are kind of active at about the same rates, we all think, oh, that's not too bad. I mean, generally, though, in Australia, we're underactive. We're not moving enough. But what we're seeing is nowhere near enough girls in competitive sport. They're dropping out of competitive sport in their mid-teens, in that 14, 15-year-old age group. And we're not seeing anywhere near enough women running sport, you know, invisible leadership roles. And then we're certainly not seeing enough facilities that are supportive and safe and inclusive of all girls and women.
So with the athletes that tend to drop out, sort of those mid-teen type areas, is there any reason that you have identified for this happening?
There are a lot of reasons. And, some of them are environmental. Some of them are around people or culture within clubs. Some of them are around individual approach to perfectionism or being fantastic at something. We know that girls who are 13 to 14 have a lot of body image concerns. They have concerns about how well they can do tasks. So for a lot of them, I think they think, well, if I'm not going to be awesome, if I can't be Liz Cambage, then I'm not going to play basketball. Or if I can't hit a ball like Elise Perry, what's the point? And then perhaps their parents aren't saying, no, stick at it. You can be okay. You can be in the C team or the thirds or just do it because it's fun. So I think that there's a lot of issues that are relating to the individual but also the environment that we need to address.
So do they drop out of sport completely? Is that what you find over the course? Or do they sort of stick around but maybe not necessarily in the playing role?
What we are finding is that when girls or women drop out of sport, they drop out altogether. And that's a real shame and a real loss. And certainly I know, you know, we're here to talk about coaching today. What we don't see with women players is that they don't think that coaching is a viable career option. They don't see it as a natural pathway, a transition pathway from elite sport to then coaching, which is a terrible loss to the sport, and particularly for basketball. If we look at the number of girls that are registered to play basketball in just in Victoria, why are there so few women coaching both the head of leagues and associations, but then in WNBL teams and internationally? And I would argue that there's not a lot of difference between sports. The issues and the barriers are probably very similar. So the big one, I think, I'm sure you're aware, is that being a coach of any type of team is a big time commitment, and you're usually not getting paid for it. And from the majority of women in their 30s or 40s, they've got kids to look after or parents to look after or pets or, you know, other commitments as well as a job. So it's pretty hard to justify giving up your time if you're not getting paid and if the environment is not necessarily supportive or inclusive. And what we do see is a lot of women coaching maybe at that of their teenage children age, you know, or their under 11s, etc. But if they're not seeing women leading in WNBL as much as they could, or they're not seeing women being celebrated as great coaches, or they're seeing what we're seeing in all sports, which is that women as coaches are under an enormous amount of scrutiny and a far greater level of scrutiny than their male peers, that you think, well, why would I do it? Why would I sign up to be something that I could have crazy parents screaming at me from the sideline, or a newspaper writing about me and writing about my appearance or my voice or my weight, and not writing about whether or not I'm a good coach or not?
That is a massive issue, in all honesty, and media plays a massive part within the sporting landscape, obviously. What could you do to try and address that, or how do you combat that? Because we can't control the media in a lot of instances. In a situation like that, how would you recommend coaches deal with that?
So in some regards, this is a sports responsibility. I think sports broadly can celebrate the women that they have coaching or leading or being CEOs or, you know, whomever they have in leadership. They can do stories about them, press releases. They can send that to their local media or put it up on their Facebook pages and their websites and saying, here's Jenny Smith. She is the head coach of this. Here's a little quick interview that we did with her about why she does it, what she loves about it, what she's found hard, who are her mentors, who are her role models. Because if you're a 22-year-old young woman and you're thinking, I wonder if I'd be a coach, and you see that that woman's had similar barriers to you, she overcame them, she found mentors, she found solutions, that then becomes an attractive career option perhaps, or it becomes a really great way to use all your basketball knowledge, but for, you know, maybe for $50 a week or for whatever it is to add to something that you're already doing. So we definitely need to celebrate the women who exist. We also need to address environmental issues, and when I say that, I mean, what's the system like and how supportive is it of not just women, but of people who might want to do things differently? So if we look at other sports where being a coach might require an enormous amount of travel, and certainly for your association coaches and definitely for your WNBL coaches and NBL, that's a lot of travel. So does it need to be that way all the time? Are there systems in place to help support those head coaches? You know, we were just talking off air earlier about Larissa Anderson, coach of Dandenong, Cheryl Chambers, the coach of Sydney, and Claudia Brassard, coach of Townsville. It's great that there are three women who are WNBL coaches, but what about all those other teams? And those players don't see that being coached by a woman is an asset or a value. If we look across to netball, Lisa Alexander for many is a real shining light of a world-class international coach. But there are still men coaching in netball because women don't necessarily feel like it's the place for them to be in high performance.
So Hedy, we do have an enormous number of female coaches at the domestic level, the participation type level. How do we get them to move from participation to that? I mean, what the time barrier is obviously a massive one, but are there any other suggestions you've got in place that we can really encourage females to jump into the high performance pathways as well?
A big one for a lot of women is that they say that they're not always willing to put their own hand up, but if someone tapped them on the shoulder and said, would you consider doing this, they'd think, oh, I don't know, oh, gee, I'm not sure if I'm ready. But the person doing the tapping on the shoulder needs to say to them, I support you, I'm going to endorse this, I'll help you, you come to me with questions. If you don't feel like you're ready, that's cool. No one's ready for their first job the first time they're a head coach. So you need to provide an environment that's safe for them to fail. And when I say fail, I mean make mistakes. Not be perfect straight away. As another great analogy, Kelly Underwood, the football and sports commentator, when she first was the first woman to ever commentate an AFL game on the radio, she did an okay job. But of course, AFL fans were very quick to criticise her and say she was garbage and not good enough. And Bruce McAvaney came immediately to her defence and said, hey, 40 years ago, I did my first call. I was terrible. So give this woman some time to develop her skills in a safe environment where you can be critical, but you just say, okay, she could be better. And trust me, that woman is her own worst enemy in terms of self-criticism. So tapping women on the shoulder is a big one and say, hey, would you like to have a go at this? Have you ever considered this? What do you need to be able to do that? Do we need to find more support? Do you want to do level 3 coaching course? Is this about time and flexibility, or is it just about allowing you to say the first season, we don't need to win the whole time, but we want good culture in the club or good communication? Rebecca Goddard, who was the first AFLW premiership winning coach of the Adelaide Crows, gave us a great example last week when we had our Change Our Game networking forum for advancing women in coaching. She said that parents can be a really hard group of people to wrangle. You know, they've got a real vested interest in their daughters and sons. And she said, you've got to bring them into the room. You've got to maybe meet with all of them at the beginning of the season and say, let's all agree on what our values are. Let's agree on what we want for this team and how we're going to play, how we represent the club, the association. Because then they're on your side. And so if you get 4, 6, 8 weeks into the season and you're not winning, but their kid's happy, or the kid's getting a diverse experience of playing some bench time, some time on the court, then, you know, you really can't have issues with parents because they're going to feel like, well, this is what we agreed on, yeah? We want good culture, good, safe environment. So sometimes it's just about understanding that there are a lot of different parties at play, aren't there? And it's a complex and difficult job.
It is, and I was at that lunch last Friday and Rebecca did a fantastic job of talking, as did the other two ladies that were involved in it as well. And just hearing Rebecca's journey from jumping into AFLW and now she's an assistant coach with the Canberra Caps as well, just that diversifying her own knowledge as well. And the big thing that she really imparted on me as well is you don't know everything. You've got to keep learning. You've got to be open to, yeah, okay, I made a mistake on that, but you've got to keep learning yourself. And there are so many avenues and opportunities to do that. But the use of mentor coaches, I think, is a really valuable one for our females as well. Find someone you can trust that you can go and learn from. They can guide you a little bit as well. But they'll pick you up after your mistakes. And I think that's a really valuable one. And I think it doesn't matter if it's a male or a female mentor at all. It's just someone you trust is probably the biggest thing in that space as well. And you can see how much work Rebecca is doing in that space as well. She does a fantastic job with the AFLW teams, coaches her own junior teams within the Canberra League as well. Is a great role model for players that want to transition into coaching as well. Is there a lot of value in having a female coach of female players, and is that more likely to turn those players into coaches as they get older as well?
We do know that when women see other women coaching them, that they see that that's a, as I said, an attractive or viable career option. That being said, Anne-Marie Harrison, who's the CEO of the Victorian Institute of Sport, said that last year the VIS advertised for 2 coaching positions. They had 107 applications for the 2 jobs and 6 women. And when she's talked to scholarship holders at the VIS across an enormous number of Olympic and Paralympic and Winter Olympic sports, zero women on scholarships will say that they would consider being a coach. Now, that is a really interesting one because certainly we know that women give, particularly in high performance, when you're a high performance athlete, you give a lot of your time, energy, commitment to a sport. Tends to be starting to encroach upon childbearing years, upon money earning years, upon relationship years of your life. So often when you leave that sport because you retire or you've had enough, the last thing you feel like doing is then giving more time, more energy, more, you know, you might want to have a kid or have a relationship or go to university or start a job. So I think it's about bringing it into the conversation a little earlier. I mean, we think of the number of women who've spent time on a court as a player whose understanding of basketball is just profound. They probably don't realise how much knowledge they have. They don't realise how much understanding of invasion sports, of teamwork, of picking a team, of strategy, of coming back from being behind, all those things that they think is just that everyone has. Trust me, no one has that kind of amazing knowledge. So women are underestimating, and men, I'm sure, players are underestimating the skills that they've learned. And getting back to your earlier point about not knowing everything, I mean, I started this job nearly 12 months ago. I had never worked in government before. I had never started an office, been the CEO of a small office before. I had no staff and I had no idea what I was doing. It was really overwhelming. But people are amazing. People want to help. Men and women throughout Sport and Rec Victoria and in this department as a whole, I would just constantly knock on their door and say, this is a really dumb question, but how do I do this? Or why do we have to do it this way? Or what am I supposed to, someone's asked me for this thing, what does that mean? And people are really, really helpful. They are willing and they're much more forgiving than we are of ourselves. So I think when you start putting yourself in those environments, you think, actually, people do want to help me. They do want me to go well. That makes the whole club or the association or the team look good. There will always be people who are competitive with you. And sometimes they're doing that because actually they're just insecure or anxious about their own performance. And so we can help them as well.
I think that's fantastic. I was listening to a podcast from a coach in Leeds who said that coaches impact more people in 1 year than most people do in a lifetime. And it's incredibly true. It's just the amount of, you're usually, after teachers, the first person that a child will come to if they have a problem, but you can also have an impact on the later years as well. So you spoke about a lot of females that may finish playing, go away, have a family. How do we get them back involved again once they've had that family? And how do we keep them sort of giving back to the sport, I suppose?
Bribery. You've got to bribe them. But you've got to make them, I think, flattery in a way. As I said, you've got to remind those players of the insights and the skills that they have. And you say to them, we do not want to lose you. We want to keep you. In the same way that people take maternity leave from jobs, you want to say, please stay involved. Please stay part of this club. Keep inviting them back to functions and events and say to them, hey, don't forget, we'd love you to be a coach here. I mean, when people are assets, this is what we do. We want to retain them and we don't want them going to another club or another sport or another organisation or be lost to the suburbs. So certainly we're seeing some of the women who are coaching are now former WNBL players who've got kids, aren't they? Sort of 10 to 15-year-olds. And that's a great thing. I think the other challenge too is around visual representation globally. And we were talking again off air about Becky Hammond and assistant coach at San Antonio Spurs. Her, just even the fact that she was going to be interviewed for a head coach job in the NBA, so coaching men, made world news. And for me, what stuck in my mind about that whole process that occurred 6 or so months ago were photographs, images of her standing on a court, looking up to a 6'11" man with him looking back at her as she gave him some really serious, stern instructions, you know, at the halftime break. And you thought, this is, as you described just then, this is a vital relationship. This player trusts her implicitly. She is giving him incredible instructions. One of the players in that team wrote a great open letter that got published describing how important it was her, as an asset she was to that team, but also how rigid gender stereotypes hold us back from letting women take on those jobs. So a former player, elite player like her, who's now become an amazing coach, shows us too that the way to be a coach doesn't have to be the same. It's not about a masculine type of giving a spray to the athlete and making them feel fearful. It's actually about being collaborative, using your players to the best of your ability. Bec Goddard again described how important it was for her to bring her 3 star players in regularly to say, how are you going? How do you think the team's going? You know, so remembering that you have all these years of IP sitting there on the court as well. You've got to use that knowledge. And women we've seen have been inclusive more often. They're more supportive of environments. They have more different problem-solving routines to kind of overcome issues. And so I think that that describes also what we're seeing in male coaches is the appearance, the behaviour, the language of male coaches is changing. It's evolving. It's becoming more modern and inclusive. They're not all just fiery men yelling at players and making them feel afraid.
Are there any initiatives that you've seen in other sports that have just worked well in terms of keeping female participation high from an athlete level, but also keeping a great rate of female coaches in the sport? Is anyone doing it really well yet?
There are some initiatives that are working really well. What we know, particularly around female participation, is that if you're able to bring elements of fun into things and not focus so much on outcome, you're more likely to retain teenage girls. And so modified versions of sports are working well. Also allowing girls flexibility in what they wear, for example. I think we can all get a little bit obsessed about uniforms and everyone looking the same. But as you know, that if you're a teenage girl and you're concerned about your body, you don't necessarily want to wear a tight bodysuit or a short netball dress. Or so we need to be able to try and cut down some of those barriers. When it comes to coaching and women in leadership, we know that some of the sports that do it well are making sure that parents and people on committees all know that that coach or that CEO or that administrator is supported by everyone. So calling out sexist language, ensuring that no one's going to be subject to bullying and divisive behaviour from parents or people in the crowd and say, we don't stand for that. This woman has our full support. She's an employed coach here or she's a valued member of our community and our association, and no one can speak to any coach this way. So some sports, we're certainly seeing that with football. They've had a long history. Soccer, I mean, have had a history of very passionate fans and parents that probably all feel like their son and daughter are the future, Tim Cahill and Sam Kerr, rightly so. But as you know, not all kids end up that way. So I think we need support on high from people in coaching positions. We've seen it professionally. I mean, look at Nathan Buckley is a great example of an AFL coach who the club said, no, we're standing by this person. We've given him some feedback about the way we want him to change his style, but we're not sacking him. And I think that's been a shift as well in some professional sports, is don't just sack the coach as well as soon as something's not working. So we can find examples everywhere, I think, if we want to find them.
That's fantastic. Where can people go to find out more of this? So plug your website, I suppose, more than anything else.
So Change Our Game is our suite of initiatives that are funding scholarships, activations, organisations, our champions program, and changeourgame.vic.gov.au is our website where you can find any information. We're trying to connect as many people who work, volunteer and sport as possible. We're trying to level the playing field for girls and women so that our daughters have the same access to facilities as our sons, and that women in our community can say, I want to be the CEO of a sport, or I want to run sport, or I want to be a coach. And people say, sure, show us your skills and what you want to learn and how you can add value, and we will employ you.
That's fantastic. Brodie, thank you very much for jumping in. I know it's very short notice and a very busy schedule on your end, but really do appreciate your time, and hopefully your listeners do too.
Great to be here. Thanks, Rob.
Welcome, everyone. As mentioned earlier on the show, we do have a very esteemed coaching panel on for the second half of the podcast, so I'll go around the room. Our first returning guest, more than anything else, Dr. Julia Walsh from Deakin University has jumped in with us. The first one we've actually had come back. So it means your first experience can't have been too bad.
Yeah, it's
all right. It was okay. Megan Moody from the Bendigo Spirit, WNBL assistant coach, and Zoe Carr, the newly appointed Knox Raiders head coach for their senior women as well. Thank you all for jumping in. I know it's a Saturday afternoon and looking outside, it's fairly bright and sunny, and you can probably sit there and say, oh, maybe there were some better things to do, but I do appreciate you all jumping in for this. The topic, obviously, jumping on from Dr. Brodie O'Donnell, who just spoke about it as well, is females in the coaching landscape. So it's a fairly hotbed topic at the moment. We're seeing more and more females jumping into coaching, which is fantastic. But I'll probably to start off with just a little bit of your own backgrounds as well and how you got started in coaching. Megan, we'll start off with you.
So I guess I had a bad injury that kind of closed the door on my playing career. And I was lucky enough to be given a coaching opportunity in Bendigo with their under 18 girls on their youth league program. And you know, I didn't think I would enjoy coaching as much as I did from a player's perspective, but, you know, I get just as much enjoyment out of it now. And, you know, it was completely different to see the game from the other side. And I guess I was in a position where I'd spent probably about a year and a half on the sideline being injured, trying to get myself back on as a player, that I'd started that process of learning what the whole coaching side of it was. And as a player, I'd been able to play under some incredible coaches all over the world. So, you know, once I really started delving into the coaching side of things, I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I've just been lucky enough to succeed in a few opportunities. And Bendigo has been a great place for me, with giving me opportunities and developing and mentoring me. So, you know, I guess that's kind of it in a bit of a nutshell.
Yep. Julia?
I was the 14-year-old child at the stadium, full-time, with too much energy. Hence, they just said, well, you will coach two teams every Saturday. So that sort of took up 4 hours of my energy, really. So, and I really haven't stopped from that point, so 40-plus years in that business. But I think I always wanted to be a coach. And, you know, the money really drives me. Yep. You know, you get paid so much for this job that it's just... Where else would you go?
Yeah, it's very tongue-in-cheek. Zoe, what about yourself?
Well, I was not a very good player. So as a result, you know, had to think my way through games a bit and saw that, you know, I wasn't overly tall or overly athletic, so... Saw the type of athlete that was coming out of the AAS and where the game was heading, and realised that there wasn't a spot for me as a player anymore at the level that I wanted to play. So retired from playing, and then my little niece needed a coach. If she didn't have a coach, she probably wouldn't have had a team. So Jumped on board there thinking, oh, you know, it'll be all right, and then sort of caught the bug and haven't stopped since. So sort of worked through the, I guess, all the pathways and, you know, with state teams and coaching courses and things like that, and have, yeah, ended up at this level.
So, I mean, you're probably a little different, Julie. You sort of said from 14 you sort of thought, okay, I want to coach. Meanwhile, so did you have any aspirations to coach when you were a player, or did you just kind of think, this is what I want to do, I want to be a player, and that's where I stop?
A little bit like Zoe, I guess, that I wasn't the quickest player out there, so you had to kind of outsmart the people that you were playing against, and, you know, you start thinking about the game a little bit more. And in college, we started doing some, you know, college camps, and when I'd come home from being overseas, I'd help my mum out with her domestic team, and found it really enjoyable to, you know, that little kid that's struggling with getting a layup, and then all of a sudden they get it, the smile on the face they have. I don't think there's any other feeling around that's like that. So when you see them succeed, and you know, then to be able to work with the youth league programs and try and be that bridging gap from junior basketball to senior basketball, and really being able to impart some of the experiences you've had as a player to try and help those kids then achieve their dreams. You know, I think, as Zoe said, you get the bug and it just kind of sticks, and you know, it's fun. It was fun as a player, and it's, you still enjoy it as a coach. Yeah, sometimes there's tough times, definitely.
I think for me, I didn't ever really have an aspiration to be a coach, mainly because I think when you're playing, you're a little bit selfish, and you're kind of thinking about you and what you're doing, and, you know, being able to, you know, players only ever win games, they never lose them, so that's a really good space to live in. So coaches lose those. So I never really had a dream of being a coach, but yeah, it definitely replaced the competitive need that I would have been missing had I just stopped playing altogether.
Just out of curiosity, did any of you have female coaches growing up, or did you all have sort of a mainly male-dominated sort of space?
I had a female coach in juniors. Two. My very first coach out at Kilsyth was a female. I had a female coach in junior rep, and my senior year of college, probably the best female coach I ever played for, and is someone that I would aspire to be like.
Yep.
But pretty much the rest have all been males.
Yep. What about you, Julie?
Yeah, my first coach was a female.
Yep.
Yeah, so it was my introduction to the sport. Have I had any female coaches since as a player? Probably not.
Yep.
And I'll tell you just a little story here. I was speaking to four of the Boomers,
yep,
and telling them how important it was that they took leadership positions. And I asked the question, how many have actually had a female coach? And they virtually sucked in air, just said, only at Opal's level. They had, in their whole life, they had not had a female coach.
It's incredible in itself, Zoe.
I had two as a junior, so Wendy O'Connor and Marissa Philippou as a junior. And then, oh God, I hope I don't forget anybody, but two as a senior, Cheryl Chambers and Kerry Graff. But other than that, you know, that people probably think, oh, well, that's a lot. You think of all the teams you play in as a junior, especially like domestic and all that sort of stuff. And so it's actually not that many compared to the amount of coaches I've had.
Yeah. One of my players from this past Siebel season, I was her first female coach ever, which is just, it's amazing to me.
Yep.
And I had a female assistant coach, so we were the first female she'd had coaching basketball, which is just, it's crazy to think of it like that. Like, it shouldn't be like that.
Yep. Do you find there's a difference between male and, like, as players, were you treated any differently by male or female coaches, or was it sort of not really something you thought about at the time? Like, I know Michelle Timms was on a couple of weeks ago and she said, I didn't notice at all if I had a male or female coach. I just wanted to be coached by someone. Like, as long as I was being coached, I was all good. It didn't really matter if they were male or female.
I didn't really notice a difference, I guess, in the ones, and maybe I just got lucky with the ones that the coaches that I had, but I mean, at a senior level, I guess, like Cheryl in particular was really understanding of the fact that, you know, a lot of our team were playing for little or no money and still had to work and still had to do these things, so was really flexible with their time and understanding that, you know, there were sometimes we'd walk into a practice session and we weren't probably our best versions of ourselves. But she wouldn't, you know, press on us, or, you know, only if it became a habit. So whether that would have been something that could differentiate between a male and female coach, I'm not sure, but that was something I definitely noticed. There was a little bit more compassion, and yeah, maybe that is because of the fact she was a female and understood where we'd come from because she was a player herself.
I probably get to observe coaches now more than actually, you know, going back that many years and looking at that experience. And some of the things that I'd probably notice is that males actually get, there's more space for forgiveness in their coaching than there is for a female that's coaching. So if you make a mistake, it might be because you're a female as compared to a male that, oh, that's okay, and that's all right, they coach because that's how they coach. So there seems to be a more supportive structure, I think, around them in their coaching.
Yeah, as a player, I don't think I could really recall any difference. I mean, I just wanted to play, and I wanted to be coached, and I wanted to be the best that I could possibly be. So I honestly could not look back on it and say, you know, a female coach was worse than a male, or a male coach was worse than a female. I think the higher up you get, all coaches are very tough.
And you want someone that's just going to improve you, regardless of who they are.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's interesting. When I started off coaching girls, my first ever season of coaching was an under 14 bottom age girls team, I think it was. I don't think I coached girls after that for probably another 15 years. Just went straight to the boys teams. I coached a school girls team maybe 5 or 6 years ago, just because I was around the corner from work and they were desperate, essentially. And me going in and coaching a girls team after that long out, and they were all seniors, so they were all sort of like 17, 18 years old. I made the mistake of going in and thinking, oh yeah, we'll coach you guys and get you better. And I was like, what am I doing here? This is social for you guys. Like, this is not an environment you want to be coached in necessarily. This was a little bit of a maintenance type session for them. It's like, hey, don't make them worse. Get some repetition into them, but let them be social.
Like, so was probably the big thing.
They absolutely did. I certainly came out a better coach because of it, no question. And in all honesty, a lot of it was what not to say so much more than what to say to them. Like, it's... I just can't coach in the same way, and I was only assisting Zoe this year with the Siebel women, and it was probably the first time I jumped into a women's team. So it's a totally different environment again. Like, it's a really different space, and it makes you a better coach, I think. Like, it's, there's no point if you're, I know Mike talks about it all the time on the podcast, if you're only the under 12 boys coach and that's all you are, well, that's great, but you're not really testing yourself either. I think you've got to go and experience something a little bit different. I just out of curiosity, have you ever coached boys, Megan?
Yes,
you...
I have, domestic.
Yep. Yeah, enjoy it?
Yeah, I actually really did enjoy coaching the boys. And I was lucky enough when Brendan Joyce was with the Opals to actually coach our under-18 state boys for a practice game against the Opals, which was just, was awesome. Like, I found them to be... a little bit more competitive, and you know, they just, every possession mattered.
You've coached both, haven't you, Julie? I mean, you've
absolutely.
Coached the you've got the Boomerangs, obviously,
right,
but you've coached a lot of like junior girls basketball as well with Boyne over the years.
I think probably I've coached more boys than I have actually girls over my time.
I've
coached boys as well, and I think if you're looking to highlight a difference between the two, what I definitely noticed was, boys don't necessarily need to be motivated as much because they're looking to compete and they're looking to, you know, it's head down, butt up the whole time. And whereas sometimes I find coaching girls or females, there are times where you do have to really help them find that motivation, and it's a little bit of a different conversation, especially mid-game. If things are going wrong. So I found a big difference in a male player when they're not having quite such a good game. The conversation can be very different to a female player if she's not quite having such a good game.
It's interesting. It's, I was trawling through Twitter the other day just looking at random things and came across, I cannot think who it was that threw the tweet out there, but
just
male,
say it was you.
Oh, it was me, absolutely. I came up with this, and I will take all credit and recognition for it moving forward. But it was, male players need to perform to be accepted, whereas female players need to be accepted before they'll perform.
The coach of GWS
is exactly who it was, which was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. It made perfect sense to me. I'll think back now on all the teams I've coached, and it's like, my God, that's exactly what it is. Like, it's such a totally different environment and conversation you need to have with them. It's incredible. So when you sort of start talking about your coaching mentors, did you have anyone that's helped you along the way with your coaching? I think it's a really valuable pathway that as females help females, which is great. But as coaches, we all want to have mentors along the way as well. It doesn't really matter if it's male or female, but it's someone that can help out and you can go and check in with as well. Is there anyone that's helped you guys out along the way?
I have two in particular, and pretty much both for the exact same reason. So my two are Mike Bainbridge and Peter Lonergan. Played for both of them as a junior basketballer, and anytime I've needed to ask any questions or I'm at a crossroads or, you know, even when I've felt like, nah, this is it, I'm done with this game, you know, they've been honest when they've needed to be, even if I didn't want to hear it. But the main reason that I really enjoy any time that I'm fortunate enough to get with them is it's almost like it doesn't, they're happy to give me advice and lead the way for me a little bit, knowing that it's not going to go on their resume or it doesn't, you know, it doesn't play into anything to do with them or their careers. And I think that's really important. Well, it's important for me because then I know that there's no bias in any advice. There's no anything. It's just they're giving me what they feel is the best advice to help me. Mm. And I find that really important.
Julia?
Definitely. I'd say the Tomlinson family, really. Yep. Ray Tomlinson, I would have come through his school. And Sandra. So they created very much a family down there at the old Albert Park Basketball Stadium and provided opportunities. Like, early in my coaching, they said, oh, come down and sit with the women's team. So I went and sat down, like, the end of the bench. Can I hide? Sandra just picked me up. You're sitting beside Ray. This is how it happens. So they're very, very generous in the opportunities that were provided.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah.
For myself, I don't know if I've got one specific mentor that I go to, but I've been lucky enough to be able to be a part of different coaches' benches and programs. But I think for me, it's the people that I speak to that are off the court, that, you know, they kind of have a neutral opinion. They're not vested in any particular side. That they just look at it with the facts that are there and, you know, we'll say, well, you know, if I was in those shoes, this is what I would look to do, or different things like that. So, you know, I don't think there's one particular person, but, you know, my college coaches were a big part of myself, you know, getting to where I am. And I know that I can pick up the phone and give them a call anytime and they'll help me out. Or, you know, I'm very lucky in my boss, Dave Huxtable. He's
way to keep a job.
Yeah. He's always been very supportive and encouraging of my basketball, and he gives me some really good sound advice too, where it's just a really neutral opinion. And I think sometimes those people are always the best that are just, I know I keep saying neutral, but it really is.
Yep.
You know, they don't have any particular side that they're pushing for.
I think that comes down to being able to trust, like, you can trust that those people are there for you when you need it or when they can be, and you trust that they're actually wanting what's best for you, because, you know, there's a million and one opinions out there in the basketball world, and sometimes it's hard to figure out which ones to actually listen to and which ones to shut out. So I think it is really important for anybody, males or females, in any sense of the word, if you want to be a coach, having a mentor for, or finding people that you can trust is really important.
Have you ever had any negative experience in coaching purely because you're a female? I understand. I don't want this people out there to think, oh, this is just a bitching session. It's not the case at all. Like, there are certainly times it's where you simply have a really poor experience and it's gender-based. Like, it does happen. Has anyone got anything they want to share? And you don't have to get into specifics by any means. Like, it's just whatever you've had?
I've had a fair few. I've had, well, some incidents where I've been accused of being confrontational and looking to start fights for simply stating opinions. And, you know, I've tried, it was really damaging to me, to be honest, because I really started to second guess who I was as a person. You know, I was always sort of brought up, my mum and dad brought me up to say, if you've got an opinion, it's just as worthy as anybody else's. So it was a really tough time to be continually second guessing what I had to say to certain people. And to especially be sitting in a room in a meeting, have an opinion, get called confrontational, and then 10 minutes later to have a male assistant coach say the exact same thing and get met with, oh, that's actually a really good point. That was tough. That was really hard and kind of heartbreaking too, because I didn't expect that coming into coaching. You know, that's probably the worst of the experience that I've had in terms of being a female coach. There's been others that just sort of add up. So the amount of times I've walked into a stadium to coach a game, you know, at a Siebel level or whatever it is, and look, these are wonderful people and they're generally volunteers, so I definitely don't want to be sounding like I'm ragging on these people, but the amount of times I've been asked if I'm the team manager... is a lot. The amount of times I've been sitting on the bench, you know, how you have to check in players before a game, and they'll walk past me, well, to you, Rob, and ask you to, who are your starting five? And, you know, funnily enough, your name's not Zoe. So and some days you laugh at it. Some days I think, oh, that's funny, you know. And then other days when... you know, maybe it hasn't been such a great day or something like that, and you just think, oh God, like, I work hard too. I, you know, care about my players. Why does this keep happening? I've had coaches actually walk past me to shake a male assistant coach's hand before mine after a game, you know. And that just, I don't know, people will probably say that, you know, that's nothing and get over it, but when it continually happens, it starts to really sort of eat away at you and question why you do it.
Yep. Julia, anything?
Just to add to that, and yep, particularly I think when I've been at national titles, and it's the female people on the desk that come over and just walk straight past me to the other one, think, oh, can you find me? No, and actually I've had really good assistant coaches who just go,
yep,
and don't even go into the discussion.
Yep.
I suppose the experience that I found most difficult was probably coaching with, a performance coach, a male performance coach, who just kept not put. He didn't put me down verbally, but he'd turn up at a training session. I have no idea what the plan is and whatever. And then he put me down. And I felt like I was being exposed all the time, rather than, if you just let me have a look at the plan, if you just let me think through it, I can then go and coach. But if you're just going to continue to do this and turn up, be in control, be the maestro, and then expose me down the other end and say, well, the athletes will teach you. Really? It's not the way that I like to coach. So I found that really confronting, because I wasn't able to coach in that situation. But otherwise, I'm quite happy to put myself out there, and sometimes you just have got to give me half an hour and maybe you'll change your mind, or give me a few weeks and maybe you'll change your mind.
Similar to what both Julia and Zoe have said, so I was lucky enough with work. We had a basketball and regional Victoria conference, and Tracy York, Adelaide 36's assistant coach, was one of the guest speakers, and she spoke about some of the experiences she's had of, you know, the team. She, you know, here's the keys to the locker room, yet she's not actually the team manager, and, you know, just completely being bypassed. And when you actually sit there, for myself, I did a little bit of self-reflecting and thinking, and I was like, God, that happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't even realised it was just normal. You know, one of our pre-season games, here's the towels for your bench. Hang on, I'm one of the assistant coaches too. So, you know, you just, I think sometimes we're conditioned that that's how it is. And then, you know, times where you're, you know, on the floor as a coach and there's a lot of males, you're just kind of the token female that's there, and the males are all involved in what we're going to do, and we're going to be this at this basket, and it's just, oh, and you can jump over there. You know, and it's, I don't know if it's on purpose or what it's, if people are specifically, you know, meaning that behaviour, but when you actually think about it, it happens all the time. Is that because there's not enough females out there? Could be so, who knows, but we can't get out there if we're not given opportunities to get out there, and there's plenty of fantastic female coaches out there that are just wanting to improve and develop and be the best coaches that they can be.
And that dates back, like I remember playing an under-12s game as a hack domestic player, and my coach at the time, who was only a young kid, like he would maybe would have been 16 years old at the very oldest, he's like, hey, we've got to really win today because I don't want to lose to the female coach down the other end. And it's like, and that still sticks with me now, like I'm not under-12s, much older, but I still remember that stuff, like it sticks. And like, I know one of the years you assisted me, Zoe, with the under-18 boys, walking into the stadium, I wasn't coaching, walked behind two athletes from the other team who said, oh yeah, we'll be okay tonight, they're normal coaches and coaching, they've just got some girl doing it. And it's like, wow, this is different. And knowing Zoe fairly well, obviously, she's done fairly well not to king hit both of them as they've sort of walked out as well. But it does happen, and I think that's probably the hardest part to sort of stomach, is that there are these sorts of opinions out there. And it's not until we start to change the culture a little bit that we can actually start to make a little bit of headroads, because we want the coaching environment to be a really welcoming one for all coaches. That's not just male or female. That is all coaches. We want everyone to be feeling welcome into the society of coaching, and it's difficult to get. Like, it is really hard. So when we start talking about getting more female coaches involved, how do we do that? Well, is there any specific way that anyone has seen that can actually help encourage more coaches in?
I think you might have touched on it earlier in the females need to feel included. I think, and it's stuck with me since your last podcast, actually, Julia. You know, there's
somebody
a
listen.
No,
it's compulsory. Zoe has to listen.
I have a choice. You know, it's on a continuous loop at home. No,
We have a quiz every Monday and just make sure that she's got everything down.
You know, there's a small section of hell set aside for females who don't help other females, and I actually really believe that, and I think we've got a responsibility to create a bit of a, for lack of a better word, a bit of a pack, a bit of a something where, you know, there is somewhere for female coaches to turn to when, you know, I mean, we sit here and we've all shared these experiences, but I never actually spoke about it because I kind of thought I was the only one. So I didn't want to come out and say anything because then it was like I just didn't want to be tarred with the whinging, being the whinging chick, you know. So I don't know the actual answer, but, you know, if there's a way of creating some type of group or support network or something that, you know, especially young coaches looking to get into the space can say, oh, okay, you know, here's a network of females that have, you know, been all, through all this before, and, you know, we can support each other. The end of the day, though, the culture itself needs to change. How to change that, no idea. That's probably more a Julia question. but if, you know, if we can, and a lot of the time, the stuff we're talking about, I honestly believe people don't realise what they're doing. I honestly believe that. I'm not a pro-female person. I'm a pro-coach person, and I think that you know, these aren't bad people. They're giving up their time to coach. They're certainly not bad people, but I just don't think they understand sometimes that the reaction that their actions have.
Julia, any thoughts?
Well, a couple of thoughts, I suppose, different hats on. Really, from a research perspective, and that's my area of interest. What I can tell you is worldwide, nobody has solved this problem. We have looked at, and really we understand America, different sport context. We understand a little bit about the UK, maybe close to what we do. We understand what some of the barriers are. I think we've established that, and they seem to be common. But as far as strategies go, one of the issues is that a lot of the strategies have been about fixing the person. So we will train both of you to coach better, so that you both coach like Rob, and you will be okay out
good
there.
Good
grief.
No, the last thing we need is that.
But it is that sort of the problem, problematizing the woman, rather than actually looking at organizational change, looking at societal change, really, because we got to change those cultures. And there's a few things I know that we see, some patterns that we see. One of the patterns is actually have a look at the people that are appointing coaches. Have a look at your panels. Because with your panels, if it's an all-male panel, you tend to pick people that you are more like you. All right, so we get that happening out there. I think we also have to tap females on the shoulder.
Yeah.
All right, it's really important because, you know, the young boy will say, I'll get out there and do it, or the father will say, I can do anything, I'll do this. So you really got to encourage females to actually step up and then support them in that process. And I think I've spoken about this one with you before, Rob, is anytime I've seen a couple of coach courses, because I've been actually coaching at the same time, and I watch the people come in, so coaching, and I see the small number of females that are there, and I ask the question, oh, how many females did you have in the coach development, like as coach developers out there? None. So we actually need to have those areas looked at as well. And the other thing I'd say to every coach out there too, if you're coaching, whether it's girls or boys or whatever, look down your bench. You will be lucky in your whole time to actually coach someone that plays National League or for the Opals or for the, you know, any of the national teams. But when you look down your bench, you're always going to need volunteers. We're always going to need administrators, and we're always going to need coaches. And I think as coaches, we need to actually be also alerting our players to that as well, that there are options out there for you to take on other roles in sport, and that we encourage you, whether you're a girl or a boy, it doesn't matter. Let's take the gender code off coaching and just say these are the coaching skills, and we haven't distilled them. And just one last one, I think it really helps people to know what the history is. And I think the history, and although you said you're not a feminist, well, my mother was a feminist and she has no idea she was, but she was. but when you know a little bit about the history, and you can tell people some of the history within a sport context, because sport's not that old. You know, 100 plus years, and males have been in it for a long time, and it has its roots in preparing people for war and this, that, and the other. So we have that sort of hero, great man, that great man. Look, when you know that, when you walk into an organisation, it's you go in with a different mindset. You go in thinking, actually, where's the little wedge I can get some change, rather than ending up in this place and thinking, oh my God, look at all these behaviours. If you understand these behaviours were there before you stepped in there, it gives you some opportunity. And I think I said that was my last point, actually. It was my
no, it's okay. It's okay.
The other one is the critical mass. I'm at Boleyn at the moment. I'm sitting during selection at the moment for under 16. That's fun. You got to have critical masses. So I know of another club of a similar size where they can't get any female coaches, but everyone's male. So I think that's quite a threatening place for a young, for any female coach to walk into a place where they're absolutely surrounded by all male coaches. So we've got to get some critical masses in there. That's enough talking from me.
I think the tapping on the shoulder is a really big one. You know, if it wasn't for Larissa Anderson speaking to me and saying, I think you'd make a great, you know, coach one day, why don't you jump on and be an assistant coach? I don't think I would have gone down a lot of that path. Or, you know, someone else tapping me on the shoulder and say, I think you should be a part of the state team program, you need to submit an application. I wouldn't have applied. And had I not have applied, I wouldn't have got the experience to sit with Laurie Chiswick and Michelle Brogan. So, you know, and other females saying, hey, you know, you've got a great basketball mind, or you know, you're doing a fantastic job out there, have you thought about, because the perceived perception is the doors are closed, it's male dominated. And you know, I can speak from my own personal experience saying, well, I don't think I'm up to that, and, you know, really, what's the point?
Yep.
So to then have someone say, no, I actually think, and someone believe in you, to go, you know, just go for the experience. If nothing else, you've put in for the experience, and then to come out of it going, okay, actually, I think I can do this, and, you know, I'm a little bit better than what I thought I was, and, you know, you erase some of that self-doubt, which you wouldn't have done if that first person hadn't tapped you on the shoulder.
Yep.
And you're both spot on, though, because, you know, when I was coaching my niece in that team, they were, like, in regional, whatever the lowest is. Like, it was, you know, nowhere near a really high standard or anything like that. And I was still frightened that I was going to get out-coached. And that, because, you know, coaching is different to playing. And,
yep.
You know, there's, what am I going to do? And these people are just going to make me look stupid and, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, I didn't get tapped on the shoulder for that, but there was obviously a reason to go and do it. And I think, you know, I think you're both spot on. If we can sort of have a look at females and just sort of say, hey, put in your application. I don't agree with, hey, give them the job.
Yeah.
I agree with, hey, I think you should have a go at this, because I feel like giving jobs, or, you know, the token female, like you said before, I think that actually hurts us more than it helps, in a sense that I know I've been called it when I've been given jobs, and I work really hard, and so that's really offensive. So I don't want that stigma attached to female coaches, but I think if we can make them feel like, hey, go through this process, submit your application. You may not get it, but, you know, keep going with it, because eventually, you know, you put in the time, you put in the effort, you know, it will come through. There's something there. And I think that is kind of the difference between males and females, especially in a coaching space. We all feel like we're not good enough to do it. I don't know how to change that, other than what you're saying, just a, hey, I think you'd be great, but yeah, we're a lot more self-conscious, I feel, than male coaches.
Well, I think too, when we look at it, and I'm not sure if I used it in the last podcast.
That's
but
okay.
That
I'll
metaphor,
tell you if you do. No.
The metaphor to me
is it the maze?
I have used.
Do it.
I really like the maze.
It's great.
Yeah.
All right. And it is that maze, and it's about, how do I actually even navigate that pathway? Where do I start? So I stand in front of the maze, and I'm looking at the entry, and then someone turns a light out. So and where, you know, my friend up the road, he's a male, he stands there, the light's on, but then someone comes and gives him a sat-nav and he's able to walk through this maze, or someone's in front of him with a light. That's the other part. Someone's there with a light that's been there before, and they can ask the questions, and they can work through it. But I also think that males, life is an apprenticeship. Right, it's always been an apprenticeship, and even if we look at those professions of medicine and law and religion, whatever you want to say, they've come through an apprenticeship and then we've sort of got formal education out of it. I think coaching is still very, very much an apprenticeship, but I think that males have learned over centuries about how to network better, and knowing that they can go into a job three quarters baked. But it's okay, because of that apprenticeship, that they can call on this person and this person and this person to help them and learn in the process. And I don't think we're as good as that yet. We've got to learn that apprenticeship, because we weren't always in the workforce. Really, even 50 years ago, we weren't in the workforce. So that's something that's learnt over a period of time. So I suppose it's getting into those jobs, but then having those people that we can help us move as we're going through.
I think a lot of that too can be just being an assistant coach, and that's like, go and find someone where you sit there and think, hey, I really like how they go about things. I like what they do. Their teams are always good. Their players are always really well developed. I want to go and help. I want to go and jump in, see exactly what you do, build the confidence, build the talent base of themselves, and go, well, actually, now I've worked with someone, that's someone I can relate back to, and it's the mentoring thing again. It's like, well, when things are going wrong, that might be someone you can check in with down the road on your coaching pathway as well. It's, there's nice little stops you can make along the way, and assisting is just an amazing way to do things. Like, it's, and even as head coaches, like a lot of head coaches will sit there and say, I just don't know what to do with an assistant coach. Like, do I just have them take stats, or like, how do I work with them? But I learn more from having an assistant, because they'll take a completely different spin on things and give it to me. Like, I coached under 12 boys with an assistant this year, who I think I coached him in under 12s or under 14s. And there were times he'd say something to me this year coaching like bottom age under 12 boys, and it's like, damn, I never thought of that. Like, it's just a completely different way to have a look at it, but it starts a coaching conversation as well, where you can now say, hey, actually, what you said in the second quarter, why did you come to me with that? Like, where did you see that from? And I think that's just a really easy way to, okay, if you're not sure about it, here's how you get a foot in the door. Here's how you start building your network. Here's how you start building your support base. And it's always, I tell coaches, it's a badge of honour when you have an assistant coach that moves on to something else. Like, that's, it's a really huge tick in your box. Sit there and say, hey, you've put some work in with them, and it's their accomplishment, no question, but that's a really good thing for you to sit there and say, well, hey, I've had a little bit to play in that as well. Because as coaches, we're not there just for players. We're there for coaches too.
But did you have to find, did you have to work to find, to learn how to be a mentor? Because I think one of the things that we do is we assume that people can, just because someone's sitting beside me, I'm suddenly a mentor. And I think you've got to learn that as well. And the way you're talking to me, what I'm hearing is someone that's really quite comfortable in their skin. And therefore, you've been out there, you know, once you've been out there long enough and you know yourself, and it probably takes about a good 10 years as an adult, that someone says something and you can sort of engage with them and listen to them and take it on board and, this, that and the other. But if you're not comfortable, that assistant coach can be a bit of a threat to you too. So I think basketball, see, Basketball Victoria could also look at mentoring programs, teaching people how to take on that role as well. And
thought of lots of things. That wasn't necessarily one of them, but I'll take credit for it once it comes around. Like, there's no problem with that.
That bit will be edited out.
It's amazing what you can do after these things. I've made Zeppel and Trula sound smart for like 30 something episodes. Like, we can do anything with editing software.
It's
with
not
this.
What they said.
I'm sure they have a different stance on this. There's no question. But, and that is like, time is the hardest part, and we sort of, the family life for females is a really difficult part, because there are a lot of females that want to coach that go have families and then they never come back. And how do we get them back into it? I know one of the other states is working on sort of the empty nesters, as I say in inverted commas, people whose kids are now sort of getting to that 16, 17, 18 year old age where they're starting to look at life after hanging out with mum and dad, and targeting them to come back into coaching, which I think is a fantastic way of doing it as well.
But I think there's also opportunities, even when they've got kids, to have, hey, this year, once a year, we're going to have a keep touch with basketball. You might want to come back one day. So let's have a look at what's changing here. And you may only do it once a year and invite people to come in. Come and listen. We're not asking you to coach or do anything. We're just keeping you connected.
I think that's, and with social media being what it is, it's easy to stay connected now. Like, it's, I think that's something that could be really easily done within it as well. Do we do enough to celebrate our current female coaches? Like, we've got three female head coaches in the WNBL, which is probably the highest number it's been in a long time, I think. And there are probably a dozen female assistant coaches scattered throughout the WNBL as well. Tracy York's an assistant coach with an NBL team. It was great to see her sitting on a bench against the NBA teams last week as well, and she's just got herself an Australian job as well, I think, which is fantastic. It's, but do we do enough to celebrate and use those as role models for other people wanting to move into that coaching space?
I don't think we do, but I don't think we do with anybody. I don't think it's specific to female coaches. I think it's probably noticed by female coaches more because of the way we're wired, I guess. But yeah, I think, like we said before, you know, obviously players get to win, coaches get to lose. That, I don't know that that'll ever change, but I think that probably comes part and parcel with it. You know, as coaches, we're sort of programmed to, it's about your players, it's about your players, it's about your players. So then, you know, any kind of accolade that comes your way, you know I sometimes feel a bit uncomfortable. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's probably across the board.
I think we could definitely do more. You know, I listened, or was lucky enough to watch a 30-minute coach clinic with Claudia Brassard, which was phenomenal. We had Veely out there as well, which was awesome. you know, getting more of that out there for just the everyday coach. You know, that's all stuff that an everyday domestic coach can look at and go, ah, okay. It's not just specifically targeted at high performance coaches. You know, there are plenty of female head coaches around right now in Siebel and Big V that, you know, we could be tapping into and creating mentorships with. And, you know, even if it's just a monthly email or a, hey, I'm here if you've got a question, or I'm in a tricky situation, you know, have you experienced this before? You know, that old saying, if you can see it, you know, you can be it. Are we putting enough of our female head coaches out enough, you know? Sandy Brondello is our Australian Opals coach. Are we seeing enough of her in the media, in our, you know, social media? I don't know if that's a yes or a no answer. You know, I'd love to see more. I'd love to be able to listen in on stuff that she's doing, you know, as a coach, see how she's working with her group, drills that they're putting in, you know, Veerly working with our the next lot of players coming through. You know, they're two fantastic female role models. Are we doing enough to promote them so that other females can go, well, you know, there are opportunities? And, you know, for those you know, up and coming coaches that want to be a career coach, you know, there are now full-time coaching jobs that you can actually apply for, where you can do coaching as a job and get paid for it. I mean, what? But, you know, if people don't know that, if you can't see it, so I'm a big believer in it, and we need to be doing more, you know. Don't settle for where we're at. There's always more that we could do, and it's, I guess it's just like a player. Don't settle with where you're at. You can always be better. You can always keep learning.
Yep.
And look, I totally agree with you, because I think we've got to go more than just stories. We've seen the stories out there. The stories, and we've actually got to have some substance. So to actually see coaches like you've just mentioned out there doing their business out there and online, where people can get access, have a look at them. What we know, I don't know if you, I'm on YouTube all the time. Most of it is crap. So to actually have, you know, good quality females out there, 2 or 3 minute grabs that we can watch and we know that we can follow, I think provides a picture of not only them, but to see them working with the athletes. I think that's the picture. So what happens when they're working with these athletes? The athletes are doing it. The athletes are working hard. There's a mutual respect out there. So looking for those opportunities. And the media, the newspaper media, I look at... Herald Sun is my litmus test. It's not getting any better. Actually, Boomers, Deakin Melbourne Boomers. When you look at the back pages, actually got... two pictures in this week, but typically Winx is getting much more press than any of our female athletes, let alone our female coaches at all. I've never seen an article really on a basketball female coach, and every now and then, you know, Beck Goddard's in there, but we don't see anything yet in football. They'll get a two-page spread. So how do we sort of get that traction? You've got to work hard at it.
I
think though what we're talking about in terms of you know, getting resources and information and sharing information will go a long way to helping change the culture of coaching in general. So this is probably horrible to anybody that's listening and thinking about coaching, but sometimes the culture is quite awful, in the sense it's very competitive. There's not a lot of you know, there's minimal jobs, I guess, here at the higher end. So, you know, sometimes that can breed a really awful, I guess, culture and a bit of deception and a bit of, you know...
It's a bit of I move up by
bringing
someone
else down.
And
that happens that across the board again. So,
Australian, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's almost like, well, if I give you my information... you're then going to have that, and, you know, I want to keep that to myself. And so I think what we're talking about here, you know, I think can go a long way into helping change that for the better, because that is a big part of the culture of coaching that is a turn off for both males and females.
Yeah, why would you invest?
Why would you?
Hours, like,
exactly.
The hours that you have to put into coaching.
Exactly.
It consume you. 22 hours
yeah.
a day. I think, and that investment's fine, even for a reward now and then.
Mm.
That's how work is. You don't get rewarded all the time, but when you're just hit in the face all the time, it's not worth it.
Exactly. You know, you're out there doing something that you love doing, and you're trying to make a difference, and you're trying to make players better, and then you hear the expert in the stand saying what you should and shouldn't have been doing, and you think, okay, you know, and you know, you move on from it, but it's sometimes hard, and it's not enjoyable. So, you know, if we can create something, I think it would help in changing that and making it more attractive for any coach to want to join, you know, create a fraternity. You know, I say it all the time, administrators have a fraternity, referees certainly have a fraternity, players have a fraternity, coaches, we're kind of at each other a bit, like it's, you know, yeah, and we're trying to like bring each other down, like you were saying. Let's create a fraternity so it is attractive, and then we don't feel silly tapping a young female coach or a male coach on the shoulder saying, hey, why don't you go for that? Because then, you know, they go through all these experiences we go through and go, oh, sorry.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, try and I don't know.
And I was going to say, some of that is about defining what coaching is, because in the end, what we're doing out there, it's learning. Right, so we're doing a lot of teaching out there. So when you position it as that too, I think it opens the door to sharing information.
Yeah.
And I think the Tom Monson School always taught me, it doesn't matter who's in front of you, you're preparing them for any pathway. So this one can be going here, whatever, they might leave. It doesn't matter. You actually just keep investing in everyone and I suppose the education of our athletes. So and I think the States is probably better at it. Because sports based in education, and a lot of people, I suppose, have that education background, there is a bit more sharing of information. They're not going to show every wrinkle, but they'll share things. We don't do it as well.
No, we don't. We're a little bit, that's mine.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, I say this all the time, coaching is stealing. Like, steal from as many people as you possibly can.
Theft.
Yeah, exactly right. And ultimately, when someone asks where you got it from, oh, I just made it up. Like, it's there's nothing wrong with taking credit for it. It's, you know, the Leon Cameron quote.
Exactly right.
Coaching doesn't change all that much, in all honesty. We'll probably look to wind that up there. Any words of advice for any aspiring coaches that are thinking about getting into it that are a little hesitant before they make the plunge?
You've got to step forward too. It is scary for a lot of people. Learning anything new is scary, but I think when you actually do it and step over that deep hole, there's lots of rewards. And look for someone that'll help you along the way.
Well, that's coaching for me. I've put it out before on social media, but it's about moments. And you know, when you get that first moment of, you know, your little bottom age under 12 finally dribbling with her left hand or non-preferred hand or whatever it is, or, you know, it could be a CBL level or WNBL level player, you know, starting to stick a three when they've never been able to go out there, and you know, you've invested that time into helping them get to that point. The feeling that you get is second to none. It is so good. And even better when they thank you for it, which doesn't happen as often as we'd like, but when they thank you for it, and it's just, you know, it's addictive, certainly addictive, and but you get the chance to influence a lot of people, a lot more people than the regular person, for the better, and for something that they love to do. And I think, you know, getting a mentor is really important, but you know, we need as many, any coach, but definitely female coaches getting on board and joining us, I guess, on this ride.
Yeah, there's going to be challenges, definitely challenges. There's going to be setbacks. There's going to be heartache. We all go through it. You know, and when you just sit here and listen to everyone else, you realise it's not just me. We're all going through that same journey at different times. But then the rewards far outweigh those negatives that you go through, and you know, sometimes it can be a pretty thankless job. You know, we all do it because we're passionate about the sport, and you know, when you do get that thank you and the friendships that you make throughout your journey, your career, you know, those are, you know, some of the things that you look, I know I look forward to the most, the friendships that I've made and the people that I keep in contact with. And, you know, as Zoe said, we definitely need more coaches in the game, you know, especially down at the grassroots level, because that's such an important journey in a player's career that, you know, we need to make sure we're teaching these kids the right things at the right age, to give them every opportunity. But it'd also be fantastic to see a lot more female coaches out there. We're just a little light on in those numbers, and
we're coaches that are females.
Yeah. Coaches that are females, exactly. See,
we're changing
it
already.
That's fantastic. If there are any coaches out there that are considering jumping in and just don't know where to start or want a mentor or assist, like, honestly, shoot me an email. I'll try and put you in touch with someone at the club level or the association level that you can at least go and talk to, because I get it, you don't necessarily want to talk to me, and I understand that as well. You know, despite we've had 30 something episodes of a podcast, you might be a bit sick of my voice by now, so I do appreciate that, but I'll at least try and put you in touch with someone that can at least help you a little bit along the way as well. Ladies, thank you so much for jumping in.
I'm used to cutting you off. There will be people that will listen to what we've had to say today and think, oh, this is just a poor me, or, you know, this is people just having a bit of a whinge or whatever it might be. If you are somebody that has that thought, email Rob as well so he can organise a conversation with us, because I think, again, that's going to help change the culture, and we're not here to, or we haven't come here to have a whinge. We've come here to try and help, and, you know, male, female coaches, we want everyone in the game. So if that's somebody, if that's your first thought after listening to this, please get in touch with us, because we'd love to, I guess, try and, you know, speak with you and help you understand what the sort of things we're going through and see if we can make a difference.
So one stat, 9% of coaches coaching at the Olympic Games are females. And in Tokyo Olympics, we will have 52% of athletes being female. So there's
got to
be some
pathways. And it was great to see just the Women's World Cup, US and Australia play off for the gold medal game, two female head coaches, which is brilliant. Like, it's, you know, maybe there's some two coaches that are female. I'll get that right, Julia. I promise I'll get that right. Ladies, thank you very much for jumping. I do appreciate your time. We are not too far away from the Deakin Melbourne Boomers tipping off with the Bendigo Spirit.
Go Boomers!
The WNBL League this year is going to be a fantastic one, so I do encourage anyone that is looking for a basketball fix, do get out to your local stadium and have a watch of it. It is a fantastic league this year. There is an abundance of talent. Caps and Sydney played last night and was a great game. So hopefully this one is the same one. And we'll go from there. But ladies, thanks very much for jumping in. I greatly appreciate it, and we'll hopefully talk to you guys again soon.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Big thanks to all our guests on the show this week. All of them jumped in at really short notice to put together something for the listeners. Hopefully it does spark a little bit of conversation out in the coaching landscape as well, and we can start to make a little bit of shift to, with a lot of our coaches that are female. And I told you, Julia, I get that right, and I have finally done so. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back maybe next week, maybe the week after, with another show. If you can, though, please make sure you subscribe, and that feed will update automatically on your phones as well. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and good luck with your coaching. We'll be right back.